welcome back to the History of the Gilbert Theater. This is Jason Wetzel with Lynn Pryor, and it is Lynn that we're interested in tonight, and a continuation of the Lynn Pryor story as a foundation for the history of the Gilbert. Now, Lynn, we left off at a rather tense moment last week. Can you recount summarize?
Well, if we get to that in just a moment, Jason, but right now, I've gone up into the attic and retrieved a portrait of myself when I was, so let's backtrack a little bit. When I was a sophomore at San Francisco State University, the very first hours of orientation, I met Jim. And we fell in love and were together that year. And then my parents found out I was obliged to give him up. Really, one of the happiest years of my life. Sent me to a psychiatrist. And to think of the this was in the early 50s, when it was considered a mental illness, homosexuality, and you were really in great trouble if you were found out. Well, when I went back to the university that next year, Jim was still there doing graduate work, and it was heartbreaking to see him occasionally. But I promised my parents that I was going to give him up and give up that, whatever that was. And so I was going to honor my word, and I started seeing the psychiatrist and started seeing girls again. And then one day, an art student at the university, whom I just knew casually, came up to me and said, "I would like to do your portrait." And I said, "Fine." And so I began sitting for it. When he was finished, I looked at it, and I was startled. And I want to get your reaction to it right now, if you would just look at this.
This is the first time
you're seeing it.
First time we're all seeing it. My word.
It's very serious.
That is amazing. The young Lynn Pryor at, what, 20? 20 years old?
But what are you seeing besides?
I'm seeing a very intense. What we're seeing is a portrait that is approximately. It's a headshot.
It's a head floating in a white sea. But when I saw it, I said to myself, "This was not the Lynn of 1 year before, when I was with Jim."
Very
this,
serious.
It's more than serious. I mean, it is. I am saying what I see in that portrait is that I am having to, for the first time in my life, face the fact that I was not going to have a conventional life. I was not going to have that deep kind of happiness that was the year before. Now this year, I said in my mouth the expression behind my eyes. This is why I don't have it out. I have it in the attic for the last 60 years.
Go on and describe that for the audience. We're seeing
it. It's really a drawing, not a painting. It's a drawing.
Pencil.
Probably pencil. I'm 20 years old, but I showed it to an artist once. He said, "You look years older."
Mm-hmm.
And certainly...
No smiling.
Certainly a feeling of realization of deep concern and unhappiness. I brought it down only because that is what, just 1 year later, that's what I had become. And so it was living that kind of, by being happy so much of the time with my family that I had. But there it is. Now I'm going to ask that you cover it up again. I don't want to look at it during our time together, Jason. So let's go forward now. We are at the crossroads, literally, in Lafayette, California. I just left this psychologist, and he said to me, "You have to tell your wife you're killing both of you." And so I got out of there, out of his office, and I approached the stoplight, Main Street, and I said to myself, "If it turns red, I will stop at the red light and then turn right and go home. If it's green, I'm going to sail through the stoplight and go to the Golden Gate Bridge." To this day, we have, you know, lots of suicides off that bridge all the time. I could not face. He said, "You have to go home and tell her tonight."
And this, again, the backup this year, the year was what?
1954. This drawing was 54.
Okay.
this is late 1976.
No, 1976.
Oh, because I've had 17 years of marriage.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's why it's good to recap.
And the light was red. I turned and went home. Somehow got through dinner, read to the boys, then went to bed and was lying there, knowing finally I had to face the facts. Had to do what he said, and I knew I had to because we were both in bad shape. Particularly I was. So she came in and was lying down and said, "Where were you?" And I told her, and I said, "That man that we met at church, and I went to see him, and I saw him because I am a homosexual." To my great surprise, she was surprised. Then I began and we're going to try to make it work. We gave it a year. And she tried so hard, bless her heart, to do things, but it just wasn't in the cards that it was going to work. But I so wanted to hold on what we had created. It was absolutely the most wonderful life in every other way. She was a wonderful person, beautiful house, her wonderful cook. She was a full-time homemaker, wonderful mother, great entertainer. My children, 9 and 13 at the time. And so at the end of that year, I said to her, I said, when she, no, she said to me, she said, "I think we should separate." So it really ended up being her request. And I said, "Well, I think I'm as happy as I'm going to be." I had created the life that we had created. I think anybody looking at it would see that we had the American dream. Meaningful work, meaning, and children and friends, and living in the wonderful state of California, beautiful house. And yet, I did not have the final element. Excuse me. And so we did separate. That night when we decided this, I had to go to the boys and tell them. Now, we had never had a crossword in 17 years. And so I found my older son. And I told him. He began walking around the house. An eight-room house, two-story. I followed him. He just strode from room to room, just trying to escape this room. And then I followed him. They would say, "But we still love you." To the room, and it was just absolutely heartbreaking. And then I went to tell the younger one, who was 9, and his was a different reaction. He was so much younger; he didn't quite understand it. I had been cast in a play, a musical, George Gershwin's Of Thee I Sing. I was just in the ensemble. And that breakup happened during the run. In fact, I moved into an apartment the day of the opening that night. The night was the opening was that night. And I had moved some things in there during the day and then went to the opening. This was in Walnut Creek, California. And there was one song sung. It was a wedding scene. And she sang Love Walked In. Beautifully done as a wedding, beautiful white dress. And I was there as in the ensemble, facing what had just happened in those last 24 hours, watching that, remembering that day 17 years earlier, love walked in, and now love was walking out. The play was over, and I had had, I was 42, I had either been in a loving home, my parents, or college roommates, or married. I had really never been on my own. And I had rented rather a large, very blah, uninteresting apartment. First thing I could find. And that night, when I went home, and I unlocked the door, and there was no lights, it was cold, no family, no children running up to me, no hugs, no warm kitchen smells, just nothing. Now, when I had told the boys, when I was telling the boys that night, I thought it was going to cost me my reason. It would be as close as I ever came to, I just simply kind of going berserk. But I didn't. Now, a day or two later, I'm walking into this apartment and there's no family, there's nothing. You are on your own. But as has so often in my life, I have, at that moment, fortunately, because of the love and that I had with my father and mother, but my father. Whenever I have to think, Jason, about what I should do in a situation, whether in a relationship or with a neighbor or with a colleague or whatever, I only have to ask myself, how would my father have handled this? And I would have gotten the answer, the right answer, on how to do it, express it with love. And so I found myself, as the days passed, I had my work and then finished the play. And the boys started coming over every second weekend. And then very, very soon I moved to Berkeley, California, just a block from the University of California campus. Beautiful contemporary apartment on the third floor with a view of San Francisco Bay. And so began my life as a single person. One day when I went up to pick up the boys, my former wife had, we had to sell the big house. She bought a smaller one and began her life as largely a single parent. But I was certainly, since being a father was one of the most important things that ever happened to me, to this day, being a father, being a grandfather, being a great-grandfather is really the high point of my life. And so I did not lose the boys. I was seeing them every other weekend as often as I could other times. But I also was, for the first time in my life, experiencing being able to live the life of who I really was. And so I began seeking out male companionship. And I'm not ashamed to say it. It had been 42 years of... There had been the year with Jim, which was very loving, and it was just the two of us. Had we stayed together, we would be still together today. I saw him not long ago. He lives in Napa Valley with his lover of many years. Had we stayed together, I'm going to be 81 next month. Jim is 83. we could have, would have been, I feel, would have been together all this time. Having such a different life. No children. Many things not as rich as I had them. But neither would there have been all of the heartache and the tragedy that was to follow. And that drawing you just looked at sums it up. And I was realizing what was in store. Make the best of it, but you were not going to have that deep, deep, relaxed feeling of rightness drifting off in his arms every night to sleep the night through.
And after that, it seems...
Now this is this next portion from 42, age 42, through the years. Now this is close to 40 years since that time. I found great love, but it really was those next couple of years. I became promiscuous. For years, Jim and I were together, and there was nothing before, there was nothing after, then there was the marriage, and then suddenly, at age 42, in the San Francisco Bay Area, you can imagine, I was absolutely crazy. Making up for lost time, whatever you want to say. This was before AIDS. And thank God, there was that window that scourge was not there. And those are the years that I was just going wild.
And these are the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, AIDS took over in 81. Mm-hmm. So it was close to 5 years. But I had dated some wonderful guys. But I also, enough said that I was making up for lost time. All the while, the boys were coming over. And then as the years passed, they one by one asked to join me at our two-bedroom apartment in Berkeley. And we had, those were wonderful, wonderful years. Being that during that great one of the world's great universities, one of my granddaughters is telling me now that she wants to go to University of California, Berkeley, and I said maybe you can get into our old apartment where your father and I lived for so many years. Then my son began finish high school. Both one son entered the army. One son went to school in San Francisco, University of San Francisco, where I went and met Jim. So there are these connections, and so wonderful, wonderful things were happening. Now I was being myself. I was meeting wonderful people. And as always, I was entertaining. I entertained the entire building in Berkeley, Christmas and several other times during the year with the boys, sleepovers and all of their friends. It was wonderful. And had Jim and I stayed together, I wouldn't have had children. And so how can I say, so all of the things that led me to where we are today, Jason, what led me to choose, as artistic director of a theater, to choose the plays that I did, I wouldn't have been 40 if I'd done it 40 years ago or 60 years ago. I wouldn't have been as sensitive to many, many things. So I like to think I was a stronger artistic director because of my past, and we all have past, and we all hopefully are going to arrive at the point where we're not playing the victim, we are not full of regrets, but we are, while we're aware that what might have been, I have said what it might have been with Jim. I look at this drawing and I say to myself, there it is. That's what I was facing, what I was realizing, that I was not going to have a normal life. Not normal, a conventional life. We see gay couples now having a normal life, which they deserve, adopting children, accepted. Look what Bruce Jenner has done. There's this entire world of homosexuality that has been, and it's still many parts of the world, we hear about horrible things that are happening to gays, but our country is coming around so that we realize that we are just people, and that homosexuality is a variation on a theme. And so I come to this table tonight feeling very, very grateful for my past. Yes, it would have been different. Yes, I wouldn't have had such sleepless nights and so many unfortunate things. But here we are, and I am going to be saying that I don't regret any of it, and we don't want to live in the past. And I have a wonderful future right now. My mother lived to be 97, so I have at least 15 years left, according to that. And I am so very grateful. I'm grateful for my friends in this room and for you and for Bob and for all the opportunities that this house has, that this town, this wonderful town of Fayetteville, has given me to be myself in every way, including a theater person, and to start the Gilbert Theater 21 years ago. I now feel that it's an institution that's going to go on and on long after I'm gone. But I this house has been just a great joy. The design of it, the steps that go down to the lane to welcome people to the theater or to whatever. The wonderful light here, the coziness of it, the fireplaces, the garden. I will have spent close to a third of my life in Fayetteville very soon. And I'm so grateful that it's worked out this way, that I came here knowing no one and have been able to build a very, very rich life. And it's because of the wonderful people in the South. I've always loved the South. I was here when I was in the Navy. I was here as a missionary for the Methodist Church in the 70s. And now I'm going to be spending the rest of my life here. And I'm very fortunate to have all of this happen. Come to me now at this stage of my life. I've been proactive. I've not sat back, to be sure, but people's love and acceptance of me warms me every night when I go to bed. Now we come to the end of this portion of our oral history, Jason, and so I'm summing up with this thought that we are, and it's almost become a cliche, but it's true. We are where we are at any given moment because of what was in the past. My past has been so rich and so full of love. And I'm so glad that I'm ending this section by not threatening suicide. We're going to end it right there where I'm the AIDS epidemic has hit the United States and the world. And then next week we'll pick it up from there and bring my two sons into it with all the love and sadness that has come with that. Thank you for all for being such good listeners.
Thank you, Lynn, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We look forward to seeing you again next week. The history of the Gilbert Theater will continue. Have a great day.